Hello. As always, I am Kimo Oberlo, one of the Lean Senseis with Structured Lean. We are on to episode 4 of the legacies that we leave behind from the lessons that we learn in life. We are sitting here with our master sensei, Mr. Roy Nakawe. Welcome, Roy.
Thanks, Kimo. Good to see you again.
It's always good to see you too, Roy. In previous episodes, we talked about the beginning of Roy's career back in the 70s as he started with Nippon Denso and the projects that he was involved with and the people that became part of his life. He considers the 70s and 80s his learning and application years. Now we are on into the 90s and early 2000s. As throughout his career, his key mentors, Dr. Ishimaru and Ken Amano, were still there for him. But at this point, I would like to turn it over to Roy. How do you define this period?
Kimo, I call this my fine-tuning and create your own way period. As you know, the 90s and the early 2000s reflect a new era's of mega trends. This is the time when we're talking about the introduction of hybrid vehicles in the automotive industry and mobile phones for the telecommunication industries. And later on, this will go into smartphones and new technologies altogether, which changed the way people live and the way people do. And during this time, as you said, I still had my two senseis. Dr. Ishimaru now is president and CEO of Nippon Denso Japan. And Ken Amano has returned now as president of Nippon Denso Los Angeles. And they are still there to help me. But you know, now it is interesting for me, Kimo, because I am now no longer in the manufacturing and operations side. Actually, I'm now in the logistics and the sales side of the business. And I'm involved now in the setup for the Toyota North America Logistics Center in Ontario, Canada, as well as the aftermarket sales for the North America and for Latin America for Denso products. And now this is new people involved as well, but my Japanese executives called this at TMC. They said, Roy-san, you are now in the Mizushobai business, which means that you're in the wining and dining of the customer side of the business. And now it was a new way of doing things.
Wow, that's really interesting. So now you get to go wine and dine the people that you're working with. And you still, I know that you always mention Dr. Ishimaru and Mr. Amano as your senseis. However, did you have other senseis? Like, so now you're in logistics and sales. Do you have other senseis that make an impression on you?
Yes. As you know, in the Toyota world, we have what we call job rotations. So each time that you're promoted, you get a new assignment. And so now I'm in the getting exposure to all aspects of the organization. And now I'm in logistics, and there, Mr. Kusunoki is the mentor for me, or my sensei, to learn from, and how to set up logistics centers, distribution centers to support the sales organization in North America. Mr. Takemoto is now my mentor or sensei for the sales side of it and how to do OEM sales and aftermarket sales and how to use the ABC analysis to create the sales forecasting by part numbers. And then also how to use tools such as the preparation for the Hoshinkanri into 5-year plan, 3-year plan, and an annual sales plan. Mr. Oiwa, he now is also a mentor of me for local management transfer. Being an American, I have to now learn the Japanese way of doing business, but also learn how to be an executive inside a Japanese organization. And how do you apply the stakeholders analysis and the strategic thinking into your daily work and into your vision as you plan for the future? So some of the key tools that comes out of this for me was applying and fine-tuning and using it in a different way. The A3, the PDCA, the Shikumis and the Hoshinkanri, ABC analysis, forecasting plus minus by percentage by years, warehouse layout, fixed location, random locations, stakeholders analysis, etc. So just to give you an idea of how this is going. And at the same time, I still had Dr. Shimaru and Ken Amano assigned to me for my entire career as well. So these are the people that helped me.
Okay, so I understand you will have some senseis that go in and out of your life, and then a couple of them, Dr. Ishimaru and Ken Amano, who were there all the time.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, well, so just real quick before you go on, I wanted to clarify for our listeners. You had talked about some of these tools and methods, and I just, we're not going to talk a lot about tools here because you can go to our website at structuredlean.com and get more information on these. But A3s are a standard sheet of paper, but it is something that we used to refer to at Toyota as an executive summary, because you should be able to fit one-page summary.
Right.
PDCA, you've heard a lot about Plan, Do, Check, Act. It is the systematic continuous improvement. Shikumbi and Hoshin Kanri are how you deploy policies.
Correct.
And get everybody working in the same direction. And so, you know, this is all, it's all very interesting. I love talking to you about this, but how did you apply these learning lessons as you went forward?
Okay. So when I was in the sales, as you know, I was responsible for aftermarket sales. And so we had to make sales forecasts by part numbers. And I think you know this because you worked that same method when you were in Georgetown for the production control department in providing orders to your suppliers. And forecasting was critical to how we do this. And so we had to use an ABC analysis for this, as you know. A is that current suppliers or current customers, current products, yeah? And forecast by part number for the year, plus minus 10%, you know, based, and then this is a rollover as you go, as you know. Huh? Every 3 months you roll over. And then you do the same thing for B products. But the B products are now for new customers or new suppliers, could be the same products as the A products, or could be new products that are introduced as well, or the B products, the B customers, as well as the A customers. And so you have to be able to forecast this again. And everything was based on forecasts, as you know, because if you have a poor forecast, the whole operations go haywire. So the better the forecasting was, the better the analysis that you made on the forecasting based on the history, based on trend, seasonality, et cetera. And a lot of these things that you are familiar with, maybe you can share some of that as well. But that's how you had to start to do this thing. Okay. What do you think?
Yes. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. And for those that are listening, you know, ABC analysis takes a lot of different forms and functions. And you have to be able to define those for yourself. But one of the things that Roy did mention was the forecasting on an annual basis. And that's not a lot of that's not what a lot of companies do, or they're not real accurate with it. And that's the one thing that within Toyota, that forecasting tends to be very accurate. And so giving those suppliers those types of numbers. But we also talked about how you started getting into some different arenas that you applied the Toyota production system and those methodologies. Can you tell me about some of those?
Yeah. So, for example, again, you know, going back to what I was doing at that time with the aftermarket now, not only did we have to make the forecast, but we also had to call on the customers. And so in order to do this, we had to understand who the customers are, who's important to them, where their market share was. And so this required a lot of research and analysis as well. And in there, we applied a lot of the tools, such as the stakeholders analysis. So who are the people involved? How do you get them to support you? How do you introduce yourselves to them, et cetera? And I guess the best way to explain this, Kim, was I have two stories. The first one is about AT&T. And I'm going to go into depth in that one to explain a little bit more. And then the second one is the city of Long Beach and also Southern California and the political side. And if we have time, I'll try and explain some of that as well.
Yes. Okay.
But I want to focus more on the AT&T at this time. And perhaps in the next episode, if we don't finish in time, then we can do the one for the city of Long Beach a second. But let me focus on AT&T. Okay, so let me tell you about this one, because again, Dr. Shimaro comes to me now and he says, I want you to go with me to AT&T. And I said, okay, this is the one in Baskin Ridge, New Jersey. He says, yes. And he also did his own stakeholders analysis. And he said that through his connections with the Mitsui Bank in Japan, they're also a big investor in AT&T. And so they've arranged for us to have a meeting in New Jersey and for us to go there and meet a gentleman by the name of Dr. Allen. He is the CEO of AT&T. And also he will introduce us to his global operational vice president named Larry Seifert. And so, you know, give you a little bit of background about this, because now we're talking about a different way of doing business and how you create relationships, as I told you before. So Toyota in the 90s now has already started to investigate into mobile phone businesses in Japan. And they purchased some carriers as well, as invested into a company called NTT Docomo, which is a courier service line between Tokyo and Nagoya, which is the biggest carrier lines for telecommunications. And they wanted to learn more about the mobile phone business, because the navigation systems that are in the car, as you know, navigation is about mapping and how to use the freeways, etc., the streeting. And then they wanted to tie this with the phone and then make the phone into the communication center for the vehicle. And so in order to do this, you had to go to the communication center of the world, which is AT&T, Baskin Ridge. So I accompanied Dr. Shimaru. I was his interpreter as well as assistant. I call it the bag carrier. Yeah. And we were there. And we had a chance to meet with Dr. Allen. He invited us to a nice lunch. And then he asked Larry Seifert to show us around. And Larry took us through Bell Laboratories, the famous Bell Laboratories. We got to see what they're doing with their virtual at that time technology. We also got to meet a lot of their, I call them the Bell Laboratories Nobel Prize winners, you know, the famous people and in scientists and engineers, et cetera. And you could see how big they were. And what was interesting for me was that not only were you exposed to this new technology, but you were exposed to people from a different world of the automotive. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. So you're getting into AT&T. So Toyota in Japan was just starting their venture and understanding the communications industry. And they had some small part in what was happening in Japan. But then in order to really see what was going on, they had to make these connections with AT&T.
Correct. And as you know, AT&T back then in the 80s, in the 90s, they were the giant, you know, we call
yes,
it.
Yes, they were.
They had all of the, there was no Baby Bells, et cetera. There was no Verizon, you know, it was all AT&T. So they owned the world, basically. And
at that time, Toyota was the largest automotive manufacturer in Japan, correct? And AT&T was like the largest telecommunications company in the world. And that's so right. Toyota was just a small player when it came up to looking at the size of AT&T.
That's correct. Yeah. And so it was interesting because, you know, Dr. Shimaru and I made the presentation, you know, about the background, as I explained to you, why we're there, what is the purpose behind that. And we talked about, you know, the operations that Nippondenzo has globally, Toyota has globally, where we want to go with this, how we see that the future is going to be for this new technology in the years to come. And It was all very interesting. And Larry Seifert smiled at that time. And he says, so Roy, you mentioned that you have 60,000 employees totally in North America. I said, yes, this is very impressive. He says, I have 60,000 engineers here alone in Baskin Ridge. So why do you want to dance with me?
Yeah.
Why do you want to dance with me? For you that can help us in the long run? In other words, how do you make it into a win-win?
Well, that's what you always say. You always say it's a two-way street. It's not just traveling one direction down this street, but you have to make it go both ways. And so both parties can benefit.
Yes. So we talked about synergy with him after the tour and then the meeting and then the dinner. The next day we got together, we broke out into three different teams. And we talked about what kind of synergies can be done between the automotive world and the telecommunications world. And basically from this, I call it a workshop, if you want to call it that. We use, again, the same way of doing things, looking at the big picture, looking at it from a Shikumi standpoint, the global view, and then how do we use this into the proliferation and the new business opportunities. And so from that, Larry was able to provide us a help, advice, and assistance in finding the synergies. And three things came out of this. One was, he said, you guys should consider to establish and implement your own laboratories for technology, so you can learn about this technology as it goes on and how you can apply it into the automotive as well. And so Dr. Shamar agreed with this, and he says, okay, let's establish and implement LA Labs, Inc. in Carlsbad, California, for this new technology development and the preparation for manufacturing at this location. So we set up a sales and marketing for the wireless phones and supply chain. And I was given the responsibility of sales at that time. So it was interesting because it fit what I was already doing. So he helped us in this. Also, he was helpful in making an introduction to us to what they call we talked about hydrogen fuel cells, that we were also interested in hydrogen fuel cells for battery technology. And he said he knew of a company that was located in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. And there he could make an introduction to us. And so we could go and learn from them how to make fuel cell technology for this. And as you know, later on, this hydrogen fuel cell technology, of course, at that time, already Toyota was building the Prius, the hybrids. People were talking about the more and more the electric vehicle coming next. And so the project for the Mirai was an embryo at that stage. It just started. And now you look back and you got the Mirai now in production in 2020. Okay, does that make sense?
So the Mirai is a vehicle? I haven't heard of the Mirai yet.
Yeah, it's a hydrogen fuel cell car.
Oh, really? From Toyota?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I'll have to look. Yeah, I haven't heard of that yet. That's interesting.
And they haven't sold many yet. They're just still new. Everybody's still talking about electric vehicles.
Right.
The problem with electric vehicles, and this is the same thing that we talked about when we were with Larry, and this is back in the 90s, is that there's no infrastructure. And he says, unless you get infrastructure, where are you going to charge?
That's correct.
And it was interesting because he said that, think about this. He says, okay, currently, he says, many countries are building nuclear plants, but that's going to be an environmental issue later, which it became. He says, we're talking about coal for
energy. Which is also an environmental issue.
And then he said, we talked about petroleum, of course, but petroleum is based on the Arabs and could be political, could be used as a weapon against you.
And ultimately, it's a limited commodity. I mean, correct. Eventually, it will run out.
Right. And so some of the things that came out of this, like I said, was interesting for me. And the other part that was also was interesting for me was that, I had to think about a lot of things that he told me. And I said, okay, I also did my own stakeholders analysis. And fortunately for me, I have a family friend. Her name is Ruby Moy. And at that time, she was a staff member in the White House in Washington, D.C. So I asked her, what do you know about AT&T and this guy, Larry Seifert? And she said, oh, we got a lot of stories to tell you about him. Okay. And so she told me some of the stories that how, you know, there's now the talk about breaking up AT&T.
Right.
Okay. Because of the antitrust laws and et cetera. And this was interesting because this is the same kind of things that Larry was sharing with me, was that in our many discussions later on, as I got to know him real well and we became friends, you know, he told me about the, he says, well, you remember what happened in the late 80s? There was the Asian financial crisis. If you remember then, Kimo, that the there was the tigers, and then there were Asian tigers, and then there were the baby tigers. So the baby tigers at that time in the late 80s was China, which is just starting to become more and more of a power. And then you had Taiwan, you had South Korea, you had Singapore, you had Malaysia, et cetera, and Thailand. And then you had the tiger at that time was Japan, which is the big market, because at that time, China was still not the biggest, and it's still just growing out of the communism.
Right.
And so he says, what we did there was we created the financial crisis because AT&T pulled out of Thailand. And when they did that, because the tigers were playing with the currency and they were lowering their own value of their currency in order to get market share. And so we taught them a lesson on that. And so we were able to do that. I says, so you're that powerful? He says, oh, yeah, we were very powerful. He says, we could go to Washington, D.C. and we could call the shots. So he says, now, you know, because of that, we're going to have some problems. Probably we'll have to break up the companies, but we're preparing for that as well. And then he shared with me a story. He said that, you know, if you remember that now more and more the mobile phones are coming to play, and which is true because at that time the wireless technology was getting better. It was no longer that brick size cell phone, but it was flip phones, etc. And he told me about the story of Argentina, where they had to bring base stations to the country, and the base stations are for the mobile phones. And there, they got the assistance of the U.S. military to use helicopters to drop the base stations on the top of mountains. So that's how powerful they were.
Oh my gosh, they could pretty much do anything that they wanted, even to the extent of controlling the economy of these. Baby tigers? Is that what you refer to them as?
Yeah, they called it the baby tigers back then.
Yeah.
So again, you know, and on our side, what he asked us to help on was that, okay, he says, he says he's seen the Toyota production system. He's visited Toyota factories. He's seen what they have done. And he says, you know, we're going to separate the companies. There'll be an AT&T wireless. There'll be a Lucent Technologies. And then there'll probably be the baby bells that will become the Verizons, et cetera. But in the Lucent Technologies, where we are going to focus on the base station technology, and there we would like to have your assistance or your advices of how we can make it into a lean environment. And this was interesting for me because this is totally different than what I was used to.
You had your base methodologies. I know that we have talked in the past and about the three G's and the three circles, and you always refer to how you have to make it personal, and it's all about the people. So those base methodologies you bring with you, also all of the aspects of the Toyota production system that we've all heard about, you had to adjust and maneuver in order to be able to apply those types of methodologies to what you were getting into now.
Yeah, that's correct. And so I went with him to visit this new building that they had set up. It was in Morristown, New Jersey. And there it was interesting to see that it was a brand new operation, and it was in a closed environment. It was what I call clear room environment, not a factory, okay? It was a one building, about 600,000 square feet totally, and it was all clear room environment. So highly technical, highly high air conditioning, of course, clean environment altogether. And there they had engineers running their, what they call their cellular lines. So these were not straight assembly lines where one feed station feeds to the other. This was a circular horseshoe style. And then there they were having people, but the people would do three or four different things and they were all engineers. And then they would test it and then do two or three different things and then test it again. And then it was a constant move of people. But the people were had to be moved in a kind of like a dance routine, if you want to call it that. So kind of like a standardized work, but their version of what a standardized work would look like. And the movement had to be choreated to fit together with the products that they were putting together, sub-assembly products. And all this had to be fed into a line that had to be tested at each stage. And the tests had huge computer systems set up to run the tests and then to fabricate everything they did. And so it was a total different way of looking at it. Can you imagine?
So this was base stations that they were assembling?
Right.
You know, because when you initially said cellular, I was thinking, oh, cell phone, and they were dealing, but you're talking about the cellular design where one person is not just focused on one station, but can work multiple stations.
Correct.
Which is very Toyota production system-ish.
Right. And then at the same time, you know, the base stations have to be able to take in thousands and thousands of phone calls and feed it through and then be able to move it out again, you know, at the same time.
Yeah, so these aren't small finished goods, I guess you could call them. They're not small things. They're large. Base stations are large operations. They're large products.
Yes. Yeah.
And so this is what you were talking about. Now, was this what they were dropping on the mountaintops in Argentina?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
And so you see the base stations at different locations where, and then you see the cell towers. Now, the cell towers are a total different operation altogether. Okay, so you can imagine cell towers and base stations in order to run mobile phones.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, and what this does is that it's a different way of thinking, and you have to approach it from an engineering standpoint, not so much from a routine worker or what I call a standard worker, because these are all engineers working as operators.
Oh, right. I mean, yeah, we know how detailed engineers tend to be.
Exactly. But they have to do things quickly and be able to, you know, also problem solve at the same time very quickly.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Which maybe isn't quite so much what they always do.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But they had to think very quickly on their feet and be able to react very quickly at the same time. But it was interesting for me because it was totally different. And, you know, I got to meet the people again. I met through him, through Larry. He introduced me to a gentleman by the name of Agostino Corsico. And I call him Augie because that's what he asked me to call him. And Augie was responsible for this. He came from Bell Labs. It was his design. He put this together. And so I started to go visit him once a month, maybe once every 2 months, go to New Jersey, spend the weekend there with him at his home. He introduced me to the Italian American community in New Jersey, and was interesting because this is a whole new culture for me. You know, I knew of Italian Americans, but I didn't know that in New Jersey, especially in that part of the country, you know, they played a big role with AT&T. Many of them work in AT&T. Their fathers before them worked at AT&T. And before that, they worked at Western Electric, et cetera. And so they were telling me all these stories. And then they would take me to Little Italy. And there you could see them sitting in the, you know, the little sidewalks and drinking their espressos. They always shared their pasta with you as well. And it was one thing led to the other. And then, of course, you listen to their doo-wop music, et cetera. So it became fascinating for me. It wasn't just only work. It was I enjoyed the playtime as well.
So, that's what you've always done that. You've always done that. It's always amazed me how well you do that because we've talked in the past episodes about how you apply the Toyota production system to your personal life and you form these lifelong personal relationships with people. Now you're talking about how, I mean, you're still forming these lifelong relationships. You've got your base methodology, but you have to now maneuver the Toyota production system or the methodologies that we talk about there in order to fit into different climates, but you still maintain what you've always maintained, and that is the personal relationships that you form with people through business.
Yeah, because as I said, what was the same message that was given to me by Dr. Shimaru was that always remember the people that would be there to help you, and you in turn help them. And so, you know, even with Larry, it became personal. Over the years, we stayed in touch. He and I worked together. Later on, he was a kind of a sensei or an advisor or mentor to my son, Keith, when he graduated from college. And he went to work for AT&T Wireless with Larry. And even today, Keith and I still in touch with Larry and Diane. They both live in the Seattle area. And whenever he comes into town, we get together for dinner, etc. Larry was also helpful for me because he introduced me to, started doing my own consulting. And as you know, in 2000s, and I had a client, Philips. So I asked him that Philips has a division called Philips Medical. Do you know anything about it? Living in Seattle, he says, oh yeah, I know some people there. Let me see if I can do to introduce you to them. And so they in turn introduced me to Philips Medical. And through him, I got to go up to Seattle and spend some time with them because they were making medical equipment for heart transplants.
And I remember that.
Yeah, and it was interesting because I got you involved in some of that as well. But yeah, it all goes back to the people in the end and how do you work. So you can see that a lot of the things that I've done are the same. I look at the industry, I look at the client, I look at the way that they do business. I try to understand everything first in order to see where I can find synergy. And based on the synergy, then I try to find a way to go and help. So
right. And so you're customizing solutions to a particular situation instead right. of trying to cookie cutter a solution and force it into a situation.
Yeah, and it's similar what we've done. And I told you that there's a second part to the story, and maybe we won't have time enough to go into it at this time. But I applied the same ideas and principles behind that with the city of Long Beach. But again, the most important thing for me is that it's about the people and how do they help you? How did Dr. Ishimaru help me? How did Mr. Kusunoke help me? And then what did I learn from that as well? My personal learnings as well, is that, as you said, with Larry, I learned about the global viewpoint. I learned about the influence of political and business aspects together, not separately, but all together. And it helped me find new ways to go forward. So,
yes, it does. And, I really am interested in the story about Long Beach and things. But you're right. I don't think we have time to get into it now. What I would like to understand, and we only have a little bit of time left, is can you relate a story to us where this didn't work, where it didn't turn out as good as some of the other stories that you've related?
As you know, I started out with AT&T, AT&T Wireless. And then we set up Bell Lab, LA Labs in Carlsbad. And there we had to do some, we were making cell phones. So these were the flip cell phones, or they call it.
Okay. The first ones.
The first ones. And so we had to find a customer for this. And so being sales, I said, okay, let's talk to Verizon. We talked to them. We talked to AT&T Wireless as well. And we talked to Sprint PCS. And we were able to sell to all three. The volumes were smaller back then because, the mobile phone was just starting to take off. And Sprint PCS was in Kansas City, Missouri, and it was a new way of doing business for me. So I got to visit them quite often. I met with Phil. I won't give you his last name because he's the purchasing agent for Sprint PCS. And so he was able to tell me that, okay, Roy, if you want this business, you got to buy the business.
You have to buy the business.
Buy the business. So I said, okay. He says, you have to offer a price. Everything is about price. And based on the price, we will determine how much volume we will give you. Your competitors are the South Koreans, the Samsungs, for example. And they're willing to drop their prices to the point where it'll be a loss for them, but this is how they get the business. I says, okay, interesting. I says, we can do certain things, but I don't think we can do that as they do. So we'll make some proposals for you to consider. So I did that. I went back to Japan, talked to my Dr. Shimaru, talked to Mr. Takemoto at that time, who was the senior managing director for the sales group. We came up with a proposal. I went back to Kansas City, put the proposal together. Phil accepted our offer. He said, fine, I give you 500,000 phones for this year. He said, now I want you to do the second part of the business. I want you to buy all the commercials for us because, as you know, there'll be the Olympics coming, and we're going to put Sprint commercials on the Olympics on television, and you're going to pay for it.
Sounds like blackmail.
And I said, we don't do that. And so we walked away from the business.
Oh, okay. So you never went forward really with Sprint PCS?
No.
Oh, man.
So, well, you know, I'm not saying that that's a good, but okay, that's everybody has their own way of doing things. Maybe blackmail is not the right way.
Maybe that's not the right way.
Yeah, because a lot of people were doing it this way, and it was important. And you could see that whenever you went to the telecommunications or the electronics consumer shows in Las Vegas, and it was a big thing. I mean, you know, today, now with smartphones, the whole world has changed completely, and it's fascinating to watch for me, being an outsider. But yeah, that was kind of a hard lesson.
Right. Well, you know, thank you very much for sharing that. I know that we always like to share our stories of success, but every once in a while, to hear those ones that were not successful are great learning experiences. But what I would like you to ask you now is, can you leave us a couple closing comments? Because I know that you and I can go on forever on these stories that you have. But for now, what are some of the things that you would leave with our audience?
Well, I think it doesn't matter whether it's the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, or the 2000s. The main thing is focus on the people and bring value added. This is what I always look at, even today. And, you know, always think about the people who help you, like the Larry Seifers, the Ruby Moyes, the Corsicos, et cetera. And what can you do to help them back? And stay in touch with them. And if nothing else, stay in touch. Because you never know when you may need them and when they may need you. And that's what it's all about. That's my...
Well, so... Yeah, I really appreciate that. But we need to wrap this up real quick. So first of all, I just wanted to say thank you very much. It's always a privilege and an honor to speak with you. We have spent a lot of time over the past few episodes going over many of your experiences. But I know that there are many more to go over also. So if it's okay with you and you can do this, I would like to have you back for another episode in order to continue on with these discussions. Can we do that?
Yeah. So we can talk about the city of Long Beach and Southern California and how the different roles and that took place.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That would be wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that sounds good to me.
For those of you that are listening, if you've missed some of our episodes, you can take a look on our website at structuredlean.com. But for now, I would like to thank Roy once again and say until next time, you know, just keep it real and remember that it is all about the people. Thank you very much, Roy.
Thanks, Kimo.